Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Could you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Thanks for being with us, everybody. DA with you. Just 2 days away from the NFL draft. You are watching at watchda.com, the digital simulcast. You are listening along the CBS Sports Radio nationally syndicated network and SiriusXM 206. And it's time now to break down the quarterbacks of the upcoming NFL draft, as NFL Network will provide live coverage of the 2018 NFL draft from Dallas Thursday through Saturday. Fox will air NFL Network's coverage of rounds 1-3. Our next guest won a Super Bowl in Super Bowl 35 with the Baltimore Ravens. He and the creator of Sports Science have teamed up for Soul and Science to provide in-depth analysis of the draft prospects Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, Mason Rudolph, Luke Falk, and Kyle Allen. Soul and Science segments will air throughout the week on NFL Network. He's Trent Dilfer, and he joins us this morning on the show. Trent, good morning. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there, bro.
Tell me about the mechanics of Josh Allen, because people obviously love his arm. They love what he represents, but they also say it could be a work in progress since he didn't play at a power conference level. What do you see from the mechanics when you look at Josh Allen out of Wyoming?
I think a lot of the narrative has been right on. Spending time with him and kind of knowing his background, he grew up in a town called Firebaugh, which is in the way from Fresno to Santa Cruz. I went to school in Fresno. Santa Cruz is where I grew up. Halfway there, I used to stop and use the restroom in his hometown.
Okay.
That's about how big it is. He's a Valley kid, known about him for a long time, had a really interesting journey. When God created a quarterback, he created Josh Allen from a physical standpoint. I mean, he is John Elway 2.0 from a physical standpoint. He's Brett Favre. He's Andrew Luck. He's Ben Roethlisberger. Whatever you want to say, he's a massive athlete that has tremendous foot energy, a unique arm. He's a great kid. He's a learner. He's hungry. He's been through adversity. His self-talk is off the charts. Imagine they sent out 1,000 letters to colleges when he was in high school saying, hey, come check me out. I'm pretty good. And he heard no 998 times. So he's heard no a lot in his life, yet he still believed in himself. I think all those things are valuable. I say all that, and he's not ready to play. I mean, he's not even close to ready to play in the NFL. I think he's going to be an absolute superstar if he's nurtured the right way. If he gets a red shirt or two red shirt years where he can sit and learn and watch and be introduced to a sophisticated NFL lifestyle and a sophisticated offense. And he has a coach that's going to say, hey, here's all this raw horsepower, you know, and we need to refine it and harness it into quarterbacking. If that happens, watch out, because you're going to have something special. Unfortunately, the reality of the NFL is they usually throw these kids out there before they're ready to play. And if he has to learn under the gun, I think there's a high chance that he becomes a Paxton Lynch or Jamarcus Russell or a Drunken Miller, a kid with a ton of talent that isn't ready to use that talent yet in the NFL. So I think it's a hit or miss prospect based on how he's nurtured when he comes to the NFL.
Carson Wentz played at an FCS level and then made the transition pretty quickly to become a very good quarterback in the NFL. A lot of people are comparing Allen to Carson Wentz. What you're saying is that's not a fair comparison because he wouldn't transition as easy as Wentz did.
Physically, very good comparison. Unfortunately, you know, the way the sound bites and the analysis works in today's pre-draft process, people go, oh, they're coached by the same guy. They look the same. They must be the same guy. Very different guys. Carson was a fifth-year senior, wise beyond his years, a unique leader, a unique personality. Was around Carson a lot before his senior year, and it was like speaking to a peer. I was 44 years old at the time, and when I'd sit down and talk to Carson, it felt like I was talking to another dad that had four kids. Hmm. You know, he's that type of person. That's not Josh. Josh is younger. He's raw, more raw. He's less worldly than Carson, less sophisticated, hasn't been coached at the same level for as long as Carson was. Again, just raw. Think of putting in a massive muscle car engine into a Honda Civic. You know what I mean? That's kind of what you're looking at with Josh Allen. He has this incredible amount of raw horsepower, but the car hasn't been built around enough to handle that horsepower. So it's going to take time. And that's a good thing, by the way. I don't know why people go, that's a bad thing. I would die to draft Josh Allen. But I also would make sure ownership, management, and coaching were all on the same page that we're going to use discernment with this kid. We're not going to ruin this kid. We're going to make sure we build the perfect automobile to handle the engine. And that's going to take, in my opinion, 12 to 18 months, maybe longer. It's going to take the daily grind of forcing him into an NFL lifestyle and making him a pro at every level. He has the want to. He has the mental and emotional makeup to do it. He just hasn't had to do it yet.
Trent Dilfer joins us. NFL Network Soul and Science segments will air throughout the week on NFL Network. He joins us here on the show to talk about the upcoming quarterbacks of the draft. What will it take to get Lamar Jackson, in your mind, up to speed in being a starting quarterback in the NFL?
I think you got to be willing to build an offense. I love this term. I'm stealing this term from Steve Young, my old colleague and great friend at ESPN. He used to use the term bridge offense. Colin Kaepernick was successful because the 49ers built him a bridge offense. The Washington Redskins were successful with RG3 because they built him a bridge offense. Lamar Jackson is a once-in-a-lifetime type athlete. I mean, he truly is. He's much better than Michael Vick was at this point coming out.
Wow.
But he also is, we deal with this at the youth levels a lot, he's a he resorts back to his fastball under pressure, which is being an athlete. Think of a pitcher who, you know, with a full count, and he throws 98, what pitch is coming, right? He's going to throw gas and try to hit the outside edge. He's not going to throw a breaking ball. He's not going to throw an off-speed pitch. He's going to go with what he knows, right? That's what Lamar Jackson's going to do in the NFL. He's going to resort back to being a great athlete playing quarterback. So you have to build a bridge offense for him, one that allows that to happen. So some zone reads, some RPOs, some movement. You know, not force him in the pocket on first and second down, let him play the athletic position, and then the bridge is getting him to learn how to play critical downs, third down, tight red zone, end of half, end of game, where quarterbacking is so important. I think if you have a coach that's willing to do that, then it's what Kansas City is going to do with Patrick Mahomes this year, by the way. I mean, I find it funny that Patrick Mahomes has been anointed a superstar in the NFL. When if you look at Patrick Mahomes last year in college tape and you look at Lamar Jackson's is much more intriguing, much more high-level quarterbacking. I would say it's superior to Patrick Mahomes last year in college film. Yet we've anointed Patrick Mahomes as a budding superstar for the Kansas City Chiefs. Why? Because we know that Andy Reid's going to build a bridge offense. We saw Alex Smith do it a little bit last year. You're going to have a lot of these Saturday spread concepts that these quarterbacks are familiar with on first and second down. Then you're going to slowly teach him critical down football. I think the same exact process needs to happen with Lamar Jackson, and all of us will be watching TV on Sundays with our jaws dropped because he's going to make athletes look stupid in the NFL.
So is it more inaccurate to say that Patrick Mahomes is going to be a superstar because there's no evidence of that, or more inaccurate in your mind that we're not saying the same thing about Lamar Jackson because he does have all the tools?
Ooh, I haven't been asked that question. I think it depends on circumstance, unfortunately. I wish I could give you a definitive answer. I think Patrick will be successful because of what they're doing with him, and his talent is off the charts. I think Lamar could be equally successful, if not more dynamic, given the same circumstance. Here's the problem, though. If you look at the NFL landscape right now with offensive coordinators, really three, maybe four teams running a true college offense. You have Andy Reid in Kansas City. You have Nagy, who came from Kansas City, who's going to the Bears. Best thing ever happened to Mitch Trubisky because he's kind of a Saturday quarterback also. You have Tennessee with Vrabel trying to hire and did hire kind of a college football guy. And then what Peterson did last year in Philadelphia, blending a lot of the Saturday concepts into Sunday football. Outside of that, I don't know who else is willing to do that. You have to have a head coach, an offensive coordinator, and a quarterback coach that's willing to go full out Saturday offense. And it's a risky proposition because a lot of that stuff doesn't work when it's, you know, go time. When it's, like I said, 3rd and 7 and the defense knows you're throwing it. It's tight red zone and no longer can you run the ball in the end zone with the quarterback. It's the end of the half when you're running a true traditional drop back 2-minute drill. It's the end of the game when you're down 4 points and you have to punch in the end zone. There's not many coaches willing to go that direction, but that's what Lamar needs early on in his career.
Soul and Science segments will air throughout the week on NFL Network. Check them out as Trent Dilfer and the creator of Sports Science, John Brankus, team up for Soul and Science to provide in-depth analysis of all the draft prospects at quarterback, Darnold, Rosen, Allen, Mayfield, Jackson, Rudolph, Falk, and Allen. And NFL Network provides live coverage of the NFL draft from Dallas Thursday through Saturday. Fox will air NFL Network's coverage of rounds 1 through 3. And we love you around here, Trent, because you're definitely working out of the weight room as well as you do this interview, which we know your commitment, right? That's probably what we were hearing in the background.
Yeah, that's actually my wife doing dishes.
Oh, dishes. Okay.
it's her birthday, and of course, she's 29 for the 17th straight year, and she's having dishes because I'm doing radio interviews all morning.
Very nice. Well, wish your wife a happy birthday from us, and you should be doing the dishes, you know.
I know. I would be if I wasn't doing radio hits all morning.
Trent, good stuff, man. Thanks.
All right. See you.
Okay. Bye. Trent Dilfer joining us this morning on the show. My first inclination was it was dishes, but then Pete the Body Bilotti said in my ear, he's got to be in the weight room. And I said, oh, yeah, that makes way more sense. He wouldn't be in the kitchen as dishes were being done during the interview. But Bilotti, you were right. It was the dishes. Well, I was right, and then you brought in the weight room, and then we kind of both conferred. Yeah, probably our first inclination was right.
Yeah, I felt like he was doing some deadlifts as he was talking to you.
That's funny. That's funny. Well, it's interesting to hear him say that about Patrick Mahomes because it is true. Most people just kind of assume that Mahomes is going to be very good next year and is totally ready. And what Dilfer is saying is if you look back on his film from Texas Tech, his final season, he didn't look nearly as efficient as Lamar Jackson. And people are looking at Lamar Jackson as a total reach as a starting quarterback. So maybe we are too quick to anoint Patrick Mahomes and not quick enough to anoint Lamar Jackson. Hey, I've talked about this before. I think the Patriots are nabbing Lamar Jackson in the first round on Thursday. Whether they wait at 23 where they draft or combo 23 and 31 to move up, I think they're going in on Lamar Jackson. I think they're going to grab him because they know they can't move up. And Belichick even admitted this. He goes, basically, the entire draft is open for us, unlike in previous years. He says, except for a couple of players at the top. You know, because drafting 23 doesn't sound like any great shakes, but the Patriots always draft between 28 and 32. Usually between 30 and 32. So to get at 23 and to have 31 means they can package up. But he even said there's going to be a couple of guys we're not in play for. And that's going to be Darnold, Rosen, probably Josh Allen, Bradley Chubb and Saquon Barkley. You know, the top 5 to 6 picks of the draft, he's not going to be able to crack into. But everything else outside of that, he will be able to if he wants to. And I think they want to go in on Lamar Jackson. They have to draft a quarterback because they've got to start the clock in developing the next guy after Tom Brady right now. When we come back, we've got your sound check, your best audio of the day, and that includes Joel Embiid saying, no more future talk. The future is now. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And a Trash Tuesday is on your table. We have said it. It's time to eat.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this.
Remember, you can take us with you wherever you go. We're in your pocket. We're on your phone. So download the CBS Sports app. Listen to us there. We're on the TuneIn app, the Radio.com app, or on Apple Music. The Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger. Taking a look at the one who gets it done. This week, it's Pelicans big man Anthony Davis. How about AD and the Pelicans sweep of the number 3 seed Blazers? The Brow averages 33-12 in the first round as they sweep past Portland. They await the winner of the Warriors and Spurs. Golden State leads that series 3-1. Comes up extra big in game 4. 47 points in the clincher. AD was just a monster. The Player of the Week brought to you by Grainger, delivering the products that keep your facility running and is what Grainger does best. They've been doing it for 90 years. Visit Grainger.com for whatever you need, whenever you need it. Grainger for the ones who get it done. Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Everybody, there's a quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Do you need homeowners, renters, or motorcycle insurance too? Get it all. Geico.com. Bruce dialed us up in Washington, D.C. this morning. Listen to CBS Sports Radio. Good morning, Bruce. What's up?
Hey, D.A., I'm glad you got me in your office, man. I'm pleased to be in here. Hey, did you give any props to John Stockton and the big dogs coming to Utah to see the cream of the crop shine the way they did last night?
Well, I definitely gave the Jazz a ton of credit. I don't know. Do I got to give John Stockton credit just for being in attendance?
and you see how I know you made mention of the payroll decrease. So they told Rodney Hood and they told old school George. I love Hill's game over the years, but see, they knew what they had. They knew what they had in Donovan Mitchell, so they was dispensable. And you see what the results was. And same way what happened with when Klay Thompson, when the Golden State Warriors knew what they had, they told that other I can't even think of his name, about 6'1", thought he was something, went to the Indiana Pacers and told him to pack his stuff from Golden State because they knew what Klay Thompson was. So there's some things going on, but the Cantor down there in New York, Cantor shouldn't have never left. He's a warrior, he's a battler. I always said I would have kept Cantor and just let Melo stay put. And, I probably could add a little bit more here there, DA, but I'm going to sit back and cool on out.
Okay, man. Appreciate the phone call there, Bruce. I love the way Utah's playing, obviously. And I love the fact that they're doing this in the wake of losing Gordon Hayward. I mean, he was the favorite son of the city. They desperately wanted to hold on to him. They thought they were building with him. The Jazz were going to be an intriguing team with him moving forward. And then he leaves for Boston. The entire city feels heartbroken, gut-wrenching to watch him leave. Now, how can we add a piece like Gordon Hayward? How can we acquire a free agent talent but in a small city like Salt Lake? And they draft Donovan Mitchell. And suddenly, they're a hugely dangerous team in the playoffs. And Gordon Hayward's season ended before it started. Crazy how that thing flipped. Now, I think that Hayward in Boston's going to be just fine. But boy, the Jazz went from looking like they had no future to looking like they have an incredibly bright future because Mitchell is a superstar in the making. Let's get to your sound check, your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Everybody is talking about the future for the 76ers. except for Joel Embiid.
A lot of people say that we have a bright future, but I think our time is now. We have a pretty good chance. We have a special team, you know, a lot of great guys. You know, I don't think we need anybody else. So we just got to work with what we have, and we have a special team that I feel like we have a pretty good chance to go far.
So Joel Embiid saying, our time is now. And look, I have poo-pooed the idea that the Sixers could make the NBA Finals. I still think it's too much to ask them to win three different games, or three different series, rather, in the NBA playoffs when this unit has never played together before. But this is broken great for them. Getting Joel Embiid back has given them another dynamic superstar. Ben Simmons looks like a veteran out there in just his first postseason. Redick and the rest of the guys, Dario Saric, everybody is contributing. And to the second round, they would get either a Bucks team that is wildly inconsistent, fired its coach middle of the season, or a Celtics team that is clearly banged up, missing many of its best players in the second round. And then the third round, you'd get either the Raptors or the Cavaliers. Right now, the Raptors are having trouble with the 8 seed, and the Cavaliers look like they might not get out of the first round either. And if they do, clearly we've seen what around LeBron is, which is not very good. So the Sixers do have a shot. I mean, they do have a shot at doing it. Quinn Snyder, Jazz head coach, on how well Utah played in game number 4.
I think both teams were aggressive. And, you know, that's the playoffs. You're going to have aggressive physical games. And, you know, both teams want to win. And that's what, you know, that's the way the game goes. And, you know, we want our guys to be aggressive and also, you know, be solid and not, you know, lose sight of, you know, what we needed to do to win the game.
Quinn Snyder is not considered one of the best coaches in the NBA, but he might be. Quinn Snyder's a really good coach. He's a really good tactician. It's just that he burned his way out of Mizzou. There was a lot of controversies that surrounded him at Missouri. And when you see him now, it just looks like he is on death's doorstep. I mean, Quinn Snyder, he's probably in his mid-40s, maybe late 40s, and he looks like he's 80. I mean, honestly, he looks like this is taking quite a toll on him. But look, the guy can coach, and the Jazz are on the doorstep of winning first-round series in impressive fashion over the Oklahoma City Thunder superstar tandems. And finally, Minnesota head coach Tom Thibodeau, who is looking more and more like Danny DeVito in the Penguin role from Batman 2 every single day.
As I said, you know, I know how explosive they are, and if you have a bad quarter like we did, you know, 37 was a lot, so 50's a lot.
50 is a lot. Yes, that's a lot. As Tom Thibodeau, known for his defense, has a team last night that allows 50 points in a quarter to Houston. Now, I know that the Rockets have one of the most dynamic offenses in the NBA, but Minnesota at home with Tom Thibodeau on the sideline gave up 50 points in a quarter. Just to extrapolate that out and do some math there, that means that at that pace, the Rockets would have scored 200 points in regulation last night. I thought that Thibodeau was supposed to bring defensive acumen.
Now, in his defense, it was going to be 47 until Eric Gordon, a buzzer-beating three.
Right, yes,
so
it was only 47.
50's a lot.
50 is a lot.
And they all said that. Jimmy Butler, too. 50's a lot of points. Yeah, thanks, guys. We are well aware of this.
We know.
Yeah.
That's what makes this interesting. All right, that is soundcheck this morning here on the show. When we come back, Robert Abbott's going to join us in studio. He's the director for the 30 for 30, the last days of Bobby Knight. A fascinating 30 for 30 about how things spiraled out of control for Bobby Knight at the end of his Indiana tenure. We'll get to that coming up here next. It's a Trash Tuesday as well, so you can tweet us your trashings. DA on CBS at the Twitter handle.
The glitch in the simulation.
What kind of pot?
A crock pot.
No, I don't believe I know
I don't believe I know what kind of pot that is.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
You need to eat like this. You need to eat like this.
Check out this week's Nomad episode. The freshest episode out there right now is my trip to a sneakerhead's paradise that also had a cereal bar attached to it where I got sugary treats from all of our youth. Got to check it out. That's on Nomad on YouTube, my digital travel series. Also, a little reminder that we had 100 lucky winners for DA Show koozies that we gave away this month, and that was awesome. I'm getting all these great pictures back. If you won a DA Show koozie, a little wet, little drippy.
A little wet, little drippy.
Take a picture of it wherever you are and send it to me, and I would definitely repost those. I'd love to see those. In fact, one of our koozies made it to the Trop for a Rays game, which
how
was
about
awesome.
That?
Yeah, how about that? So anywhere you are, take a picture with the DA Show koozie, and we will definitely repost that for everybody and all the fellow D-Aliens. And you might be saying, DA, how can I win one of those? Well, you got to be a subscriber to the Nomad channel. That way we have your subscriber name and then put you in the hopper for our giveaways. And we'll be doing more of those as the summer moves along. So check it out. Simply go to Nomad, subscribe to the page. Just search my name and Nomad, or Damon and Nomad, which is my name backwards, and you'll see it. Subscribe, and bingo bango, we'll put you in the hopper for some more drawings.
Hold on.
Hold on.
I'm not on Twitter or Facebook right now.
The NFL draft is almost here. Nobody covers it better than NFL Network. Go behind the scenes and into all 32 war rooms as the stars of tomorrow are selected. The 2018 NFL draft starts April the 26th on NFL Network and on Fox. And of course, the 26th is on Thursday. I just find Kevin Durant so perplexing. I just find him so confusing. And I think he's confused. Kevin Durant, I think, is, look, he's a great basketball player. He's a future Hall of Famer, NBA Finals MVP, clearly one of the best players of the NBA. So this has nothing to do with his basketball. Well, it has something to do with his basketball, but more so, I'm interested in dissecting the person that is Kevin Durant. When you reach those heights, you would imagine you have heard everything. And at some point, it just rolls off your shoulders. Because how can you possibly care about everything? Social media is great, but social media is a minefield because there's so much of everything that if you get criticism, you get it from all types of people. You get it from bots. You get it from anonymous sources. You get it from people that have the egg as their avatar. You get it from people that put their name to it. You get people in the media. You get people that are fans. You get people in other organizations. You get other players. I mean, just the amount of criticism you get on social media, which is direct on your phone, in your pocket, or on your computer in front of you, is devastating. So at some point, you've just got to create some type of callous wall. And I know that for me, I've had to do the same thing. I mean, look, I like social media because it means I get to interact with you guys. That's fun for me. It's cool to know who listens to the show, how you listen to the show. It makes me feel more connected to the people that actually care about what I'm doing. And that means a lot to me. That I could be here and have a microphone and that people would care what I had to say, that means a lot. I take that really seriously. So I like social media in that regard. But believe you me, I mean, I get hammered on all the time for opinions that are unpopular or things that I might say or people that don't like me. And I've realized you just have to be able to filter a lot of it. And clearly some stuff will cross the line. But for the most part, you know, it comes with the territory. And I'm okay with that. For Kevin Durant to quote-unquote like a criticism of Russell Westbrook on social media after he already went through this nightmare last offseason by having a burner account and being an anonymous defender on social media of his play, of his reputation, whatever, it's just so bizarre that he would continue to do this. Remember, last summer, when he was defending himself with a burner account, Durant said, that was me being a total bleeping idiot. I own up to it. I want to move on from it. But here we are again this week where somebody takes a shot at Russell Westbrook on social media and why it was fine for KD to leave because of that. And KD likes the comment. Now, he says it was a mistake, but come on. What are the freaking odds that that was just a mistake? Again, defending himself for leaving in this situation, blasting Russell Westbrook, and wanting to get the message out there that he was validated. I think he's addicted. I think he is an addict. And this does not speak well to Kevin Durant being a superstar that is inevitably going to find some type of criticism somewhere from somebody. We all do. But he's freaking Kevin Durant, and now he's a champion, and now he's an NBA Finals MVP, and now he's going to the finals probably again, or certainly another couple of times with this team, and will probably be going to the Hall of Fame, definitely going to the Hall of Fame one day, and he's still worried even after learning this lesson. That does not speak well to me of Kevin Durant personally. And I don't get it. I don't get how he can keep going down the road of being a petty, petulant moron when it comes to social media.
Google, Yahoo, Facebook, Twitter.
And I generally like Kevin Durant. And I just go, what is wrong with this doofus? 855-212-4CBS is the phone number. 855-212-4227 on Twitter, DA on CBS. I had a chance to check out an advanced screening of the new 30 for 30 by ESPN called The Last Days of Knight and The Last Days of Bobby Knight and the way that his life and his profession and career unraveled in Indiana. It was a really important story to me to be told because it shows how hard it is for individuals to stand up to a machine in athletics, in college athletics, and other institutions that we have in the U.S., but that it needs to be done, and people need to follow those stories, and the journalism being done behind that is important as well. So joining us is the director of that film, Robert Abbott, who joins us in studio. Robert, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, man. How you doing?
Doing great.
This story is impactful. I think it also, while I grew up in a time of watching Bobby Knight in the 80s become a kind of a statue on the sidelines, an icon in himself, I certainly remember and lived through this unraveling as well, but I think that now it's 20 years has passed. A lot of people forget how crazy that was at the end. To go back through and kind of piece together the timeline, was that kind of surprising to you to kind of see how quickly it all kind of unraveled for him?
I was right in the middle of it, basically. Back in 1999, three high school All-Americans had left IU. It was Neil Reed, Jason Collier, and Luke Recker. When Luke Recker, Mr. Indiana Basketball, left IU, my boss said, go find out what's going on. So for the next 17 months, I kind of had my head in the sand just grinding it out as a journalist.
And this was for CNNSI at the time.
It was for CNNSI at the time. We did two pieces. One, Neil Reed made some allegations that he had been choked. He had kicked the president out of practice. And that Coach Knight had come out of a bathroom stall with toilet paper in his hand and showed it to the team and said, you guys are playing like SH, you know what. And IU denied everything. They attacked CNNSI. They attacked Neil Reed. They attacked every player in it. They attacked me. And it wasn't until now that I've done the film that I realized how crazy it was.
Yeah.
Because I was right in the middle of it, but every day I was just making another phone call, trying to get another person on the record. So for me, reliving it 20 years later, and that's really the wheelhouse of 30 for 30 films.
Correct.
It's not so old that it's ancient history, and it's not so new that nothing's happened in it.
That's right.
I mean, if you look at the one that won the Academy Award, O.J., if they had done it 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been nearly as good. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have gone back to prison. There's not more layers to the story. So this is a story about power and the abuse of power, and especially in this day and age where people who are victims need to stand up, and oftentimes journalists are the only way they can go. They can go tell their story to a journalist to get it out.
One thing that I was fascinated by is you talked to A.J. Guyton. He was one of the captains on that team. And as you said, IU tried to railroad Neil Reed. They tried to discredit the report. They tried to discredit Neil Reed and everything else. I wonder, the guys that they had, like A.J. Guyton, go up on that podium and say, he never choked Neil Reed. Neil Reed's soft. He's not the type of player we want in the program. In retrospect, are those guys embarrassed
that they were, for lack of a better term, kind of the lackeys for IU to kind of put this hit on Neil Reed from a popularity and a public perception standpoint? Did they regret speaking out against Neil?
I think they're conflicted. The word I keep coming back to is conflicted. I think a lot of them, half of their persona admires Coach Knight, loves Coach Knight, because he has a lot of great qualities of teaching discipline, team play. So they owe a lot to Coach Knight. What ends up happening is if you put in your 4 years there, there's no sense in speaking out against Coach Knight. Because if you put in your 4 years, he'll make the phone call to get you a job, whether it's inside or outside the world of sports, whether it's in sales, whether it's at a sneaker company, or whether it's with another basketball program. AJ likes Coach Knight. He didn't have issues with Coach Knight. But again, put yourself in Coach Knight's locker room. Put yourself in any locker room around the country. If something goes bad and a kid leaves and you're still playing on that team, are you going to call your coach out on it? Very few athletes in the country would ever do that.
So I would agree at that time it made sense that those guys would band together. But now, I mean, the film is so empathetic towards Neil Reed. He had passed away. He's now passed away, and he's been vindicated. He's been validated in passing. Those guys, I would feel, should feel regret that at that time they helped railroad a former teammate. Do you think that clarity has come to them?
Some it has and some it hasn't. Some still don't see the forest through the trees. They're still in that mentality. There's a lot of players to this day who will go to their grave swearing by Coach Knight. Somebody I interviewed 19 years ago and talked to again recently said, you're not really going to hear the truth about Coach Knight until he passes. Because people are still afraid. There was people who wouldn't do an interview with me up for this film 19 years later because they felt they would get death threats. They had gotten death threats back then, and they thought they were going to get them again today. Spoke to John Wertheim. You saw him from Sports Illustrated's in the film. He did a 30th anniversary piece on the chair throw, and there were still people who wouldn't talk to him about it. Because I don't use this term lightly, but twice in the film, somebody says it's like a mafia family. A former coach said it's like a mafia family. And it is true. He's vindictive. If you leave, you're leaving the family, and the whole family is going to band against you. And even when I was assigned the story, I didn't think there was a story. I thought they were soft. I thought they were wimps. I thought they couldn't handle it. You know why? Because that's the message that program put out. If you leave, you're just not tough enough. And you saw Neil Reed in the film playing with a separated shoulder, diving on the floor. He could barely lift his arm. You know, kids are tough or they're not tough. You don't lose toughness. If you're tough when you're 5 years old, you're going to be tough when you're 55 years old. And Neil Reed was a tough kid.
Robert Abbott, the director of 30 for 30, joins us here on the show, The Last Days of Knight. One thing that will never be clear is what happened after the choke of Neil Reed, because the video cut off. But Neil Reed suggests that there was a physical altercation between Bobby Knight and Neil Reed after he tried to choke him. Is that burning inside of you to know what exactly happened after the choke happened?
I think the only thing Neil Reed said incorrectly was the words pulled off. He said Coach Dockich and Felling had to pull Knight off him. I talked to John Walden in the film. He headed up the investigation for the Board of Trustees. He said in his reports, in his interviews, that they went back at each other. I have a feeling the best way to describe it for me is people had to step in between them. I don't think Coach Knight ever went back and put his hand on Neil again, but I have a feeling they got face to face and had to be physically separated and maybe not pulled off. So the term pulled off, we've all been in schoolyard fights where people step in front, you put a hand on the chest and say, hey, DA, back off, easy, easy, easy. I think that's more likely what happened after the camera cut off.
That's most MLB and NBA fights, by the way.
Yeah, soccer.
Some type of separation between the two. Where can our listeners check this out? This is on the new ESPN Plus app, right?
ESPN Plus app. They have a 30-day free trial, so you can sign up. If you love it, they won't charge you for a month. If for whatever reason you're not loving it, you can still watch the film. I'm amazed at the reviews it's gotten. I think it's a powerful film for the time in which it's running. When you think about Harvey Weinstein, when you think about Matt Lauer, when you think about Bill O'Reilly, and those are all more sexual harassment, but it's really just someone in power misusing their power. And institutions, as you said at the start of this, supporting those people and trying to cover it up.
There was an element of Larry Nassar. Now, I realize that was sexual abuse as well. But that a university, an institution, would protect its own no matter what might be leaking out is devastating. And I'm not putting Bobby Knight in what happened here with Larry Nassar.
Neither am I.
Just an institution that protects and puts the walls up and how difficult that is to break down.
Jerry Sandusky, Joe Paterno, Penn State, Baylor. You can go down the line of schools and put yourself in their position. You have a Hall of Fame coach. And I don't think anyone wanted it to happen. That's the one thing 20 years later, 19 years later, as I interview executives from IU, that I think it's just little decisions over 29 years lead to that. And they didn't want it to happen.
The Last Days of Night, the new 30 for 30 from ESPN and director Robert Abbott, is a fascinating watch. I highly encourage you to check it out wherever you can, including the ESPN Plus app. Robert, great stuff, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
When we come back, we'll do NFL Draft with Daniel Jeremiah from the NFL Network. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.